And I believe we do have the presidential candidate, Catherine Connolly, with us on the line now. Catherine Connolly, good morning to you and thanks for talking to us this morning.
Good morning, Jerry. Just to say I'm on a motorway. Needless
you
to
are,
say, I'm not driving. But it's just difficult. So if we cut off, I apologise.
Sure. Yeah. I know, look, I understand you're incredibly busy. You're in the heat of campaigning, so we'll allow for that as much as we can. You're coming to Kerry. You're going to be in Tralee. You're going to be in Dingle. You're launching a presidential Irish language programme. Is that right?
Yes.
What would
presidential
that involve?
Initiative. Well, it's actually 100 years since the Commission for the Gaeltacht was set up in 1925, and it reported in 1926. And it identified the challenges facing all the Gaeltacht areas at the time, and that we needed a regional economic policy. And they highlighted the challenges to the sustainability of the Gaeltacht areas. That's 100 years ago. So I thought I would use that report as an inspiration, really. What does it look like 100 years later? Where are we 100 years later in relation to the sustainability of the Gaeltacht areas? In relation to all the other challenges that were identified in that commission report. And so I hope to run a series of events over a year, a mixture of events, literature, music, academics, and looking at where the Irish language is at, and also championing the Irish language as a fantastic gift to have the Irish language, a different perspective on a world. So I think I'm looking forward to that. I'm looking forward to doing that in collaboration with people on the ground who have more experience than me. Yeah.
Okay. You're talking about the Irish language there, and you've made it a big part of your campaign in terms of the importance of it. I just want to talk to you about two different issues on it. What do you say to those who feel alienated by the Irish language? Who feel that it wasn't for them, they weren't taught it in the right way. Some of them even suffered physical abuse in their schools because they couldn't speak Irish. They have an overwhelmingly negative experience of it. And in the context of what has happened in this campaign in particular, where candidates have been questioned, and it's turned into a bit of a purity test that you shouldn't run for President of Ireland if you don't speak Irish, despite the fact that just 2% of the population speak it fluently.
There's a huge amount in what you've just said.
For you?
There's a huge amount in what you've just said. And I've never been a person who criticised people who don't have Irish. I've never done that. I went back and learned it myself. I would like to look on myself as someone that would empower and enable people and encourage people to use the Irish language. And indeed, we see a revival all over the place. In Dublin, we can't keep up with the demand for secondary schools. So we have a number of all-Irish national schools, and the children can't transfer into a secondary school. Constant representations to us, all parties. So on every level, there's been a fantastic revival, love and interest in the Irish language. So I have no difficulty. I never, ever distinguish between somebody who was Irish or not Irish. And as I said, I went back myself and learned it. I did a diploma over 2 years and then a translation course. And, you know, it was a privilege to do that. And I was in Galway and it was easy for me. So I know it's difficult for people, but I would like to be an example to them of it fits in with my whole model that learning is a lifelong thing. My model of learning is it's lifelong, and I believe all educational institutions should be focused to allow people drop in and drop out at different stages of their lives. And indeed, it's something I got from my father from a very early age. And in a family of 14, we have had a whole range of experience from doctors to psychologists to carpenters to a plumber, and at different stages depending on our circumstances and our family at the time. My mother haven't died. My sister stepped up and took care of us and then went back into college later on. So that model is part of my DNA. And so Irish is also part of that, that will be to encourage people to learn.
Okay, talking about that and talking about, I suppose, the learning of the Irish language, and the North is one area particularly, and unity, you've talked about that during your campaign as well. Would you be concerned that your concentration on the Irish language might cause trouble for you when you're speaking to other communities in Northern Ireland? The reason I put that out there is because this week we've seen people taking jackhammers to bilingual language signs in Belfast. We saw back in 2017 the collapse of the Stormont Assembly. One of the main reasons for that was the Irish Language Act. There's a feeling from some of the communities up there who would have to agree to United Ireland that Irish language is being used by Sinn Féin, the main party supporting you, as pushing the Irish agenda, pushing nationalism, and disregarding their rights and feelings.
Again, there's quite a lot there in all of that. Quite a number of parties and non-parties are supporting me, and I look forward to the support of members of Fianna Fáil as well. I think we have a lot more similarities than differences, and for me, that's a good lead into Northern Ireland, where there's a lot more similarities than differences. And so we've had a meticulous, methodical work on the ground to bring people together to have a united Ireland when we're ready. And so the framework was 98.
But you could make the argument that the Irish language is actually separating and dividing people at the moment, the way it's being pushed.
It's quite the opposite.
How can you say that when people are taking jackhammers to Irish language signs and the Irish Language Act actually contributed to 2.5 years of a suspension of the Assembly?
If I could answer it, I'll do my best. I think the Irish language is a wonderful language. It gives you a completely different perspective on life. There is no artificial distinction between the human being and nature in the Irish language as there is in the English language. And it would actually be an advantage to all of us to champion the Irish language, obviously in the most positive way possible. I have never used the Irish language to distinguish me from somebody else. I know, as somebody who went back, the challenges of learning anything. And I would encourage people, as I said already, in relation to Northern Ireland, the Good Friday Agreement.
Can you understand why it's divisive, though, in Northern Ireland at the moment?
I actually don't think it's divisive. We have a small number of people, as we've had throughout this country in the past, taking paint and destroying Irish signs.
Okay, Belfast Alliance MLA Nuala McAllister this week accused Sinn Féin of ignoring the wishes of residents, igniting flames and tensions within communities, and of placing getting your own way above protecting and promoting the language in the context of what happened with the signs this week in Belfast. So is that not divisive?
Their comments made. We're talking about an Ireland, and I was finishing in relation to the Constitution firmly sets out that we have a united Ireland. That's the firm will of the Irish people. And the important part of the rest of the article, by consent, respecting all sides, all communities. And indeed, I think maybe I mentioned on your programme before, maybe not, but I've had the privilege of meeting with Senator Francis Black and two members from the North in relation to the civic engagement on the ground, and they had two pages of instruction in relation again to those words, meticulous and methodical work on the ground, venues online, venues in person in the North and in the South, with the view to putting an emphasis on our similarities while absolutely respecting our differences. And just in relation to that, the cross-party committee produced a report a year ago and made recommendations into the way forward for a united Ireland. And that report sits on a shelf. And they specifically asked for a green paper from the government to map out where we're going in relation to this in a way that unites, in a way that includes. That absolutely, that's the only way forward. But the steps haven't been taken. But there's tremendous work on the ground in relation to work going on, uniting communities. And again, if I go back to my trips to the North, I went to the Shankill Women's Centre. I went to the Women's Centre on the Falls Road.
And you'll continue on that work if you're president of Ireland. Okay.
What struck me was the similarities.
That you'll focus on that and bring people together that way. Can I ask you about your description of your campaign as a movement for people to change things in Ireland, to get young people involved in politics, a movement of the left, shall we say. If you get elected next Friday, are you willing to put all that aside when you're president, as you will have to do as a non-political actor?
Absolutely. The role is completely different, the role of president. And as you know, I served in many different roles. And I would say I did it to the best of my ability and as professionally as possible. And I've said before, as a barrister, as a clinical psychologist, a teacher for 3 years, and as Las Cian Corla for over 4 years. And I also functioned as Cian Corla when the Cian Corla wasn't there. So I have experience in this of listening to everyone. I'm fully aware of the role of the president in the constitution. So I have no difficulty with that, Jerry.
You've framed your campaign, though, when it comes to being president, as being a voice for people. You've talked about people with disabilities. You've been hugely critical of the government when it comes to... You paint quite a negative picture of the country that we're in, I thought, to a lot of what you've said. Pointing out... And maybe it comes from a time of being an opposition politician, but would you give the government any credit for the positive things that are happening in Ireland?
Absolutely. I've certainly agreed with the government on occasions with motions that didn't go to a vote, with proposals. I've no difficulty. As a member of the opposition, our duty is to try and hold the government to account. And just to come back to the movement, because this is in relation to the presidential election, I've never identified the movement as a movement on the left. I've identified it as a positive movement.
Is that not what it is, though? You're talking about housing, you're talking about changing radically the way the country is run. That's how you framed it.
I framed it as a movement that we will shape a different republic together, an inclusive republic that puts aside differences, and a president that will listen and hear and reflect. It is a movement of people that say, what is a republic? To start to discourse, what is a republic? Can we truly call ourselves a republic if we have over 16,000 people homeless? Can we truly call ourselves a republic?
Will you be willing to step back from all of that next Friday if you're elected? And not intervene in the way you're talking now, using the language you're using now to criticise whatever government of the day it is for any perceived inability to fix the problems of the country.
I'm using language in the most positive way. I'm talking about a discourse of what is a republic, what are the core values of a republic. That's a discourse that needs to happen. And obviously, I'm going to leave aside my role as a TD in the Dáil and embrace the privilege, the absolute privilege of serving as President of Ireland. And Article 12.8 obliges me to take a public and solemn vow to serve the welfare of the people of Ireland. That's a very important article. All the articles in relation to the President are important, but that signifies the specific role to serve. And I take that very seriously, the word serve, the welfare of the people of Ireland. You're coming and going, sorry now, Jerry. But just to warn you.
That's fine. We can still hear you clearly from that. One element I wanted to talk to you about as well was the campaign and how it has unfolded. You feel you've been smeared. Why do you feel you've been smeared, or how have you been smeared by your political opponents?
I'm a candidate who's robust, and I can take part in any debate and give as good as I get. So I have no difficulty with that. But for instance, this morning I had to correct the other candidate in relation to say Paul Murphy was my director of elections. Now, that statement was made yesterday on national radio. And no correction went out till hours later. Paul Murphy is not a director of elections. I have a very good, competent woman.
Does that qualify as a smear, though?
There are many, many examples. That is the latest one in terms of a smear campaign. Allegations have been made against me against the Special Criminal Court. I absolutely respect the law of the land, as we all must do, and particularly as a barrister in the past, obviously, having views on the Special Criminal Court.
Just on that, I understand your point there, what you're making. You're saying that you're rejecting it. But again, that's a political charge that's been made against you based on your voting record.
No,
you voted against the Special Criminal Court. Yeah. So how does that qualify as a smear, as opposed to maybe an uncomfortable question nonetheless about your voting record?
I have no problem with the question. I'm talking about what my colleague in Galway in Fine Gael said, that I didn't respect the Special Criminal Court, and stronger words than that. That's a second example. I absolutely respect the law of the land. It's a political decision in relation to what we do with the Special Criminal Court. And on that political level, the government sought a report, and two reports came back from that group, a majority and a minority. Both said abolish the Special Criminal Court. Both of them did. The majority then said set the court on a statutory basis.
Yeah, they don't want an emergency. They're in favour, the Port is in favour of that type of a court for reasons, but also that it wasn't an emergency point of view.
They wanted. So I'm not alone in asking for the Special Criminal Court to be abolished.
The point I'm trying to get to is you feel there's been an orchestrated smear campaign against you. Like, I'll give you an example of the difference. There's journalistic questioning on difficult issues in your past and decisions you made and questions of your judgment. There was a smear campaign in the course of this campaign. It was Jim Gavin. And questions about his private life, which were totally unfounded and untrue, which made its way online. That's a smear campaign. I'm just curious as to why you think questioning qualifies as a smear campaign.
I have never equated the two in my life. Never, Jerry. Absolutely.
Is that not what you're doing in this campaign, though? You're describing anyone who says anything against you as somehow part of a nefarious campaign of smearing.
You see, you're putting the question and you have the answer. And I'm answering you. I have never equated the two. I was the first candidate off the block in the third week of July. I have been out since. I'm the only candidate that has repeatedly stood in many, many public forums. Four public forums chaired by independent chairs. Carrigan Shannon, Sligo, Drogheda, Dundalk. I have faced the press everywhere I've gone, every agricultural show, the ploughing championships, stood there and openly answered questions. Let me just deal with the smear. I think even Ivan Yates absolutely highlighted that when he said, this is the advice I'd give Fine Gael, a former Fine Gael minister. This is the advice.
Many years ago, and Catherine, I'm talking about that. Ivan Yates is a controversialist. He has a podcast to sell. He said that to get attention, and there's several other instances of which he has said that. It's his style of broadcasting. He doesn't work for Fine Gael. He's not involved in their campaign. You're equating that with the current campaign of Catherine Connell, of Heather Humphreys, suggesting that that's what they're doing. Is that really the case?
You say so much in a question, I have to tease it out a little bit. Ivan Yates actually did us a favour. He said, my advice is smear the bejesus out of her. Bring out the big guns.
Would you contend, though, he's got nothing to do with the Fine Gael campaign for Heather Humphreys?
Heather Humphreys has said that. She has said that. However, nobody in Fine Gael or the candidate has distanced themselves from that comment from a former Fine Gael minister.
So Catherine Connolly said he's nothing to do with her campaign. So how can you say that's not distancing her from his comments about his advice to smear you?
Not Catherine Connolly, Heather Humphreys.
Or Heather Humphreys, apologies, has distanced herself from those statements made by somebody who's nothing to do with her campaign. So how can you say that she hasn't distanced herself?
She has not distanced herself. Nobody has rejected those comments. Bring out the big guns. Run a campaign of fear. And that's what's happened here. To say that somebody on the left, like Paul Murphy, is my director of elections. Just throw it out.
Do you think that the media have treated you unfairly in the course of this campaign?
I am a robust candidate, absolutely robust, and I have stood up to all the questioning that's been put to me.
Indeed.
Absolutely. And I hope to be president next week, and I will serve the welfare of the people of Ireland. It would be an utter privilege for me. I will go back to all the places I visited. The first group to come up to the Oras will be the carers. And then I will go back. I've committed to the project in the Irish language, and I've also committed to a carers initiative to allow them to come in and listen and produce a report from what they're telling me. Absolutely non-political, nothing to do with policy, but to empower and enable people to use their voices. That is a theme of my campaign from day one. And it's a uniting of people with similar values from all sides of the house, from all ages, young and old, who are coming forward. Some disagree with my views, but what they respect is that I stand and say what I believe based on conviction, based on research, and mostly and based on listening and reflecting. And I think
One of our listeners got in touch this morning suggesting that perhaps maybe whoever is president should, the salary should be reduced by €100,000 to €230,000 a year, that the president gets paid too much at the moment. What's your view on that?
I have similar views, actually, but I think that's a policy issue. The policy
It's not in your control. The government would have to do. No, but what would your opinion be on it? Let's say.
I'm saying it should be absolutely discussed, and it's a policy issue. And I'm in the middle of a campaign, and that's a policy issue. However, I have publicly said, after my salary is taxed, that I will look at using a significant portion of that for projects on the ground, some of which I've seen. I'm not going to outline those now. It would be unfair because I'm going to do that in as fair and just manner as I can. It's becoming increasingly difficult to hear.
I understand. Yeah. I understand this. We're going to wrap it up now, but thanks very much for giving us your time, and good luck on your trip to Kerry. That's Catherine Connolly there, running for President of Ireland next Friday. She'll be on the ballot paper alongside Heather Humphreys and Jim Gavin, of course, but Heather Humphreys and Catherine Connolly, the only ones that are actively looking for your vote. If you have a view on what she had to say, get in touch with us on the programme, 0667123666. We'll have more.